Society of Illustrators of Los Angeles podcast. I'm here with Ian Dale. How's it going, Ian?
Great. How are you going?
Doing well, man. So, Ian, you've been a member of the Society of Illustrators of Los Angeles for the last...
2 years, I think?
2 or 3 years, yeah. And you're also an illustrator and artist. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Well, I've just this month, I've been freelancing for 10 years now.
10 years, wow.
10 years, yeah. So it's a nice way to look back and commemorate the time. But I grew up out on the East Coast near Washington, D.C., and I came out to L.A. to study fine arts and also animation at USC. And kind of in the years since I've graduated, I've done a lot of different things, some design, some illustration, some animation, but I've sort of gradually focused my way as I've gone along, and now I'm doing primarily children's-oriented illustration, and also work with a lot of faith-based and charitable organizations, doing materials for kids overseas, and that's been a really good fit for me, and I'm really happy to have gradually gotten there. But it's definitely been a winding road, and I've learned a lot along the way. So I'm happy to think back on some of the crazy stories.
So what made you gravitate towards children's illustration?
Yeah, so it's always been something that would make sense. I think earlier on, I just had this idea in my mind, I'd like to do some children's illustration one day, but I don't think I was really connecting the dots as to being like, well, why don't you start? You know, why don't you...
What's stopping you, right?
right. It's just like, I'll do that eventually. That makes sense. I like kids just in general. I volunteer teaching preschool on Sundays sometimes, and I just have a kind of a childlike taste sometimes. I love
you have
it.
Your own kid now too, right?
So. Yeah, 2 months old. We just had a baby, so I'm actually really looking forward to all the fun cartoons and toys and everything. And we were having baby showers, and friends were like, "Ian, you know those aren't for you; those are for her, right?" So I get excited about kid stuff, and it makes a lot of sense. I think there's sort of two sides to me. There's one side that's a little bit darker and intellectual and philosophical, but then there's also the sort of the whimsical side and the fun side. And I think right now it's been a easier way to get started with freelance illustration, focusing on the kids market, mm-hmm. since it is such a natural fit. I mean, I would like to branch out and kind of have both sides represented in my work, maybe do some more editorial or fine art kind of stuff as well. Doing kids' work has been a really natural fit, and the first place to start. I also work a lot with like nonprofits, and I think for them, illustration is not, you know, a high necessity unless you're working with kids, and then it makes a lot of sense. And so in terms of where I fit into different parts of the market, kids and illustration kind of go really hand in hand.
So you've done a couple of kids books. I mean, you've done an app,
mm-hmm.
right?
I did it's called the Bible app for kids. It's a kids' version of the Bible, which obviously is a very long book, and it's not as long as the adults' version, but it's 40 stories, and so it took about 2 years to work on that one. And then it's animated and interactive in the app, but then when you...
I heard it's had millions of downloads, right?
15 million now, right now.
Wow,
so yeah, it's like the kids' Bible app out there, I think it's over 20 different languages they've translated it to. So
15 million kids or
15.
People, yeah. 15 million... people have seen your artwork, which is
pretty
awesome.
In every country, so that's pretty cool. So once we finished the app version, they also made a print version of that. So my illustrations are in the print book, although I made them for the app. But
that's wild.
Yeah.
So do you see yourself moving into more children's literature as far as books are concerned?
I'd like to, yeah. I think that's been something I've been working towards. I haven't done, you know, your traditional 30-page, richly illustrated, 32-page, right, children's book yet. But I've done a lot of illustrations for educational workbooks and kind of like chapter heading illustrations for books that have more words. And so I think that's been a good way for me to get started and, you know, learn to meet my deadlines and learn to work faster and really refine my style. And so hopefully in the next, you know, year or two or three, that'll be sort of where I'm heading, is towards more of those traditional children's books. And I mean, I could see myself one day even writing them. I'm kind of, we just had a baby, and so I'm kind of thinking as we raise her, I'm going to be sort of figuring out, you know, what stories I have that, and what, where those might fit in, or what's missing in the children's books that we've gotten for her, and what I might like to contribute. So I could see that one day too.
So you went to USC, and I think I read that you studied traditional painting.
Yeah. So I went to USC actually because of an interest in animation. When I was in high school, I was really into computer animation. I did a lot of 3D Studio Max back when this was like the late 90s, so it was still really new. And I wanted to go into animation, but also I wanted to go out to LA because, you know, this is where everything's happening in that field. At the time, though, USC didn't have an animation program. Now they do, but at the time they didn't. So the best fit was for me to go into fine arts as my major. And their fine arts program is more oriented towards concept and, you know, the higher kind of arts, gallery work, and maybe becoming a professor and things like that. And they teach painting, but it's not as much of an emphasis on technique or on a profession so much. But I focused, and you get to choose your focus, and I chose my focus in painting and drawing, and I did a lot of oil painting, and I'd actually never done oil painting prior to college, but I found I really liked it. So I was on the side, I was doing 3D animation like in my dorm room, and then I was doing oil painting in the classroom, and there were things I liked about both, and then maybe some things that frustrated me a little bit about both, but I think it was a really good to kind of experience both sides of those. And then over time, I think I've moved more towards digital illustration as a way to combine the best of both worlds.
So you weren't taking classes for 3D animation. It was strictly traditional painting, right?
Yeah, all the 3D animation was self-taught. And then I took a few of the, they had a minor in like traditional animation. So I took a couple, like one history of animation class, one keyframe, you know, hand-drawn animation class, and then a lot of painting and figure drawing and things like that. And so yeah, there's a lot that I've been self-taught, and then some stuff that I've been taught in a more traditional environment, and just sort of merging it all over time.
So when did you make the transition to digital painting? Because most of your artwork now, or at least your commercial work, is all digital. When did you make that transition, and how was the transition?
Yeah, so I mean, I've had a Wacom tablet since high school, and I use it for 3D, and then I think in college, as I was getting into traditional painting, I was also experimenting more and more with digital painting. And I think what I really loved about it is the, you know, kind of the ease of not having to mix your colors, not having to clean up afterwards. And then once I got out of college,
life's a lot easier with digital painting.
Once I got out of college, I didn't have a studio to go to and a, you know, a big industrial sink to mix my, you know, varnish in and stuff like that. Digital painting just made a lot more sense.
Yeah.
And then I think I also gradually gravitated more towards digital painting as opposed to the 3D animation, because it was more immediate to my ideas. Like I tend to really be idea oriented with my work. And so with 3D, there's just so many more steps to get to that final product.
Yeah.
And to do a good piece, you got to have a good, you know, kind of a good sketch or illustration to begin with. So just to kind of keep going in that direction with that sketch. And then there's also just a lot less equipment involved too. You can have Photoshop and a decent computer.
You have to have a super
machine. Yeah, you don't have to have a $6,000 computer to do good digital painting. And so with my kind of heading in the direction of wanting to be a little bit more independent, a little bit more flexible and lightweight in my career, it just made more sense to focus on digital painting as opposed to the animation. And I think for me too, like earlier on, I'd used the 3D software a little bit as a crutch to make up for not being totally comfortable with perspective or lighting and shadow and things like that. And so as I gradually grew in those abilities anyway, I could get the look that I had wanted to get just through the painting without having to go through the 3D. I still love looking at CG art and 3D and everything, and I'm sure it's so much more fluid and advanced now than it was in the late 90s. But
yeah, it's interesting because some people go from 2D and then go into 3D animation, and now it's sort of a mix, you know, because some people who are digital painters use 3D sort of as a way to light things. Or, you know, now there's ZBrush concept artists, right?
Yeah.
Who start their work off in ZBrush and then just do a paint over, you know, it's like a mix of stuff. I mean, do you see yourself implementing any of that stuff? Have you played around with ZBrush or?
I haven't yet. I could see myself doing that. I downloaded the free Sculptress that they had a while back. And I think I just never actually got around to playing with it. I would like to again. And I think now they've switched it to, there's like a demo version of ZBrush or something. So that is something I'd like to get more into. And I also, you know, can use, I do Photoshop with photo manipulation too sometimes. And so I can use that for my concepts. And
it's amazing now Photoshop, this, you know, they have 3D objects. You can import 3D. And it's pretty wild now what you can do with Photoshop. It's just a lot more integrated with 3D than it was a couple years ago. So it's, you know, what you can do now, it's like you don't even have to leave Photoshop because you can import objects from Maya or Lightwave into
Photoshop.
That's fantastic.
Photoshop. Yeah.
It's wild.
That's great.
So what are some of your creative influences in terms of your work? Who influenced you?
Early on, I think Disney animation from Beauty and the Beast, Aladdin, and The Lion King onwards has been a huge influence. At the time, you know, it was just sort of these movies themselves. But now that I've moved out here and I've gotten to know more about behind the scenes in the industry, now I've started to find specific artists that I can really attach, you know, behind these films that I really like. So I mean, definitely that style of, Disney, DreamWorks, CGI, Pixar kind of style is a huge influence. And some of my favorite artists that, like, for me, I kind of straddle the middle between realism and the more whimsical animation look, I guess. And so I like artists on both sides, and then on the one side you have like Corey Loftus and Brittany Lee. I love how emotive and dynamic their work can be. That's been something that I've really needed to focus on, is having more energy and gesture in my work. And but then I also like the really realistic and detailed stuff, even some fine artists and people like Jeremy Geddes and Michael Kutch and Jeremy Anicio. And so then sort of in between that is where I try to go, and where some of the artists that I really appreciate, like Ryan Lang, some of the work that he's done Disney films, and Max Kostenko, he's in Russia, and Sam Nielsen. I just love how they take detail and lighting and all this amazing, like, you know, looks like subsurface scattering, but it's in their drawing, but then it's got as much energy as a much more whimsical line art gestural piece. And so that's what I'm trying to strive for. And
yeah, he's got a schoolism class on storytelling with color and light, I think. Sam Nielsen,
incredible.
I'm like anxious to watch that, but I'm like in the middle of another class and I'm like, can't switch over, I gotta finish this class, right?
Yeah.
So I'm like, but I see, like, you know, when I look through the list of courses, because they got a new one with Walter Tulp.
T-U-L-P.
Uh-huh. I mean, he's amazing character designer, and I'm like, you know, looking at the list of courses, it's like, you know, there's like this, like, I want to have that. It's like this candy store, and you're like, oh, there's that, you know.
Awesome.
I gotta finish this. So yeah, he's Sam Nielsen's fantastic. I looked at some of your art recently, and, you know, preparing for this interview, I looked and I saw a similarity to some of Ty Carter's stuff.
I love his color.
And it's because his style is very animation centric, and he works in animation, and I'm like, wow, yeah, that looks similar to your style. So I can kind of see that.
Oh, thanks.
So I was on your site, and I see that you're repped by
Deborah Wolf.
So how long have you been repped by an art rep. She's an art rep, right?
Yeah. She her company is Deborah Wolf Limited, and the website is illustrationonline.com. Mm-hmm. And I got involved with her in 2014.
Oh, so it's recently,
about
2 years.
Yeah, it's about 2 full years. And the reason I got involved was at the time I was working on that big app project that, you know, it was a 2 year project that was taking about, you know, half or more of my time each week. But I knew eventually that was going to end and I would need kind of a lot of a big chunk of my schedule to be replaced all at once. And so about halfway through that 2 years, I started to like look for an agent. And she was really she saw some potential and she was really kind to take me on. And at the time, I think for the first year with her, it was more of a coaching kind of influence that she had. And that was good because I wasn't looking for a ton of work that first year, but she really helped me to see what I needed to build into my portfolio. She helped me to kind of begin to see my portfolio the way that clients were seeing it, which was very different from the way I would look at it just when I was looking at it. And I think that was super helpful. So I got involved with her in 2014, and then probably more in start of 2015 is when I started getting some really good clients from her. And it's been going well, going great since then. So
that's great. So it's been a good boost to your career to have a rep.
Yeah, it's been great. I think when I realized that it might be worth trying out was the other option I had been looking into was getting a database of thousands of art buyers and art directors. And so I signed up with one of those for a little while, and that's just as I was going through, I was just so overwhelmed with how complicated it was going to be. I tend to be detail oriented, and so as I was going through all these different contacts, and you go to one web contact's website and they're like, we want our email to be formatted like this, and another contact's like, we want paper mail, and another contact's like, we want attachments, another one's, we want embedded images. And for me, I couldn't bring myself to just send a blanket email and disregard their instructions. So I'm like, I don't know if this is going to work for me. And so I was spending so much time in, like, you know, with that, trying to figure out that marketing strategy that I wasn't putting into actually practicing my work in addition to my client work. And so I tried out looking for an agent instead, and that's been good in that I still need to be taking steps towards marketing on my own.
Yeah,
but
if
at any given point I'm not, because I'm either building my portfolio or I'm focused on client work, I know that there's still stuff going on in the background without me, and that's been good. And it's really been helpful, I think, for just being able to focus more on my portfolio, which is of course a huge part of marketing too. So
I mean, before you were mostly marketing yourself, right? I mean, how would you find work before?
So when I first started freelancing, I didn't have a fully clear, this is like 10 years ago, I didn't have a super clear vision of exactly one thing to focus on. And so, but I had some contacts like through my church and through my college friends and just through other people that I might've done an odd job for here and there. And so I just started taking on work here and there, a website here, a flyer, a logo design, and some illustration. And so for the first 5 years, I was mainly gradually expanding from my personal network, but not with a whole lot of focus, because if the focus was people that I know and people that they know, then to get enough work, I just kind of had to take all of these different things. And I think that was helpful because I was still building up my illustration skills, and I was still, and this was also during the economic downturn, and so... So I was able to survive all of that, you know, without necessarily having a whole lot of prior experience as a freelancer. And so that was good. But I realized I really just had a desire to focus more on illustration. And so I gradually realized I need to take some steps that, you know, take some more risks that may have some downsides, but they definitely also could have some upsides. And so I started to focus more on practicing my illustration, focusing on weaknesses and skill sets and things like that. And then also for finding clients, I guess when I first started getting clients that I had never met in person, it came through social media. Mm-hmm. So there's like one really great client that I found on Twitter, just trying a technique someone had recommended where you go into Twitter and you search for the quote, looking for an illustrator, and see what comes up. And you get a lot of stuff that it's just people that have never worked with an illustrator before and they have no idea what they're doing. But then I happened to find one that was like a great fit, and I've worked with them for 3.5 years, and it's one of my favorite projects. And so that, you know, that's that great. Worked great, but it's never worked that well since then. And then the big 2-year app I was working on, they found me on a social network called Dribbble. Which it's a lesser known one, at least in our circle. It's a little bit more geared towards...
I have actually heard of it before, yeah.
Yeah, it's more geared towards design, like a website design, graphic design. But graphic there's also design, illustrators on there. And that one, it's invitation only. And so the nice thing is it keeps keeps a certain like
level,
standards layer, quality level. Yeah. And so I found that clients like to go there to search for jobs because, you know, they don't have to dig through as much... They know that there's kind of a level of quality.
Not as much noise.
yeah. And so that one, I think, so even though it's not entirely Illustrator geared, it could be a good fit because people who are building an app or building a website, they're already used to that. And so then when those people are looking for an Illustrator, that may be the first place they look, even though I may never find a children's book on that site. So,
So what was instrumental in helping you kind of... raise the quality of your work? I mean, I've heard you mention the Academy. I saw even that you have links of different resources on your your website or your blog.
It's that little handout that I made. And my blog too. Yeah. I mentioned when I was going to college, it was much more conceptually oriented. And their attitude was that a lot of the students wanted to know about how do I paint, you know, something, this lighting effect or this drapery, or how do I get this kind of brush look that such and such painter has. I think the perspective of the teachers a lot of times was, oh, you can teach yourself that stuff later. And they focus more on the critical theory and the concept behind your work. And I think all that's really important. But it's maybe one-sided in one direction. And if you went to another school, it might be one-sided in the other direction. So I'm glad I had that background. But I found when I was out on my own, there were a lot of holes in my skill set and the quality of my work.
Your tool set.
And a lot of my sketches, my characters were very rigid. They might have been very highly rendered, but didn't have the energy or the gesture that they needed, and different things like backgrounds, little things. I got feedback enough to know what certain things were my weaknesses. And I think at first that was a little bit overwhelming or a bit of a deterrent, but I at least knew what I needed to work on. And so when I started to really resolve to get serious about illustration, I targeted some of those weaknesses, like, you know, getting comfortable with environments and really working on the gesture and not over-rendering right off the bat, things like that. And so, since I had already gone through school, I didn't necessarily want to go into a big school commitment again, but just finding tons and tons of resources online has been incredible. So yeah, Chris Oatley has been super encouraging in terms of perspective, I think, and like hearing from other artists and getting over some of the self-doubt. And then other sites like controlpaint.com has been great,
great resources.
For digital painting technique, that's been really good.
Yeah,
and then for just some of the more universal techniques like composition and lighting and things like that, I'll maybe get books. Sometimes I'll get like James Gurney's books have been great. And but then also just gradually looking at a lot of art and reading a lot of articles online, making it a habit. And over time I've been able to grow in each of those different areas that I saw as my weaknesses and start to bring it all together along with the things that were already my strengths. And I think that's helped me also to know where to focus in terms of what type of work to do. I know what my strengths are and I know what I'm not as great at. And so I can look for, you know, accept that to some extent and look for clients that like me for who I am.
And not
just be like, oh, I'll never be such and such. And so I don't even want to try. But
so looking through your art, one of the illustrations that really stood out to me was the David and Goliath series, especially Goliath. There was just a certain style, and then also just the expression and the attitude and the acting. I think it just was really, it was something that caught my eye. What was that for? What project was that for?
Yeah, that's an interesting one you picked. That one, it's kind of a composite in my portfolio. There was one illustration I had done first of, it was David in the Bible, David fights Goliath with the sling and everything. And so it had David kind of swinging his sling, and he's overshadowed by this giant shadow of Goliath. And I did that one as a sort of a pro bono concept for a writer that I had been talking to online. Oh, okay. He had found me and he was wanting to pitch a book. And so I did some concepts with him and was just kind of seeing where that was going. That was back when I was still trying to get more into illustration. And so just having something that I could work on and put in my portfolio was...
looks like a children's book to me. Yeah. It's just like, wow, these illustrations, it looks like a project that, you know, you had worked on. So it was...
Yeah. So it was a concept promo or a pitch piece, I guess, for a children's book. So that was the first one. And then the one you're mentioning of Goliath, that one I actually did for Sketch Dailies when the topic was Goliath. But I sort of made it in a style where this could be the flip side of that earlier one I did.
Yeah, because this one was a little bit more rougher.
Yeah.
And I think there was more energy in that Goliath image. Just because I think it was the expression and the mood of that image.
Thank you.
Particular picture. So, going through your site, I saw that you put together this workshop for young artists. And it was really thorough. I mean, it was really great because it was just... If I had this when I was like, you know, like 17 or 16, it just would have like made my life a lot easier with just some of the tips you offered at just being an artist. This is what you need to do. How did that come about? And you know, where did you get the idea to do that? Was that for a class or something that you had done?
That was just last fall, and it was kind of out of the blue, but somebody that I know through church is a guidance counselor at a high school out in Riverside, and she was trying to recruit people for career day, and she just happened to invite me to this career day. And as I've made some progress in my career, like I've started to get to the point where it's like I really want to, you know, reinvest in the other direction. And so I was like, this could be a good opportunity, even though it, you know, it's just a small way to get started. But so I volunteered to do that career day, and they asked each speaker from all these different careers to just have a little handout that talks about what goes into your career, what's involved if a high school student wanted to pursue that. And so since my career was illustrator and designer, I was like, well, I got to have a more visually oriented standout handout than, you know, the other people might have. But it was a great opportunity to look back through some of the things that I've been learning and try to condense it just into one page. And as I was working on it, I was like, yeah, this could be just a good thing to offer. And so I posted it online, and it has some of my own personal links on the side, but then can offer some wisdom on the right side. So
yeah, I think it's great. It's a marketing tool because you have all your information on the side with all your social media, you know, places, but then, you know, the resources, and then, you know, the little tips that you have are, it's actually really good for anybody
who
wants to be an artist or who wants to, you know, get out and, you know, get into that career of illustration. So
yeah, it was an interesting process because, you know, I mean, certainly anybody could offer way more than one page worth of insight on their career, but it made you really think about what
clear,
are the top things,
concise, yeah,
and then how did the act of like laying it out in a more design oriented fashion made me also kind of categorize and group things together. And so I think it was a really helpful exercise.
Yeah, and I liked that you put the seven character qualities on the side there. That's like, oh, that's cool. That's something different that you really wouldn't see a lot in a freelance, you know, handout, you know. So it was kind of something that was unique to that worksheet that you developed.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, that's one thing I try to emphasize sometimes is, you know, there's your, I guess, like on that handout, there are the three components. There's your skills as the artist that, of course, those are going to be extremely important, and that's the first thing people think of. Then there's also these sort of maintenance skills as a freelancer. You got to be able to pay your bills and handle your money and make choices and do marketing. But I think a lot of times we maybe don't think of that third leg of the stool, which is your character. And sometimes we need to make hard choices. Sometimes we need to have a hopeful attitude, or we need to be willing to kind of put our own goals lower than the needs of our client and things like that. And so those, probably more than anything else, can over the long term, that might really be what makes or breaks somebody as a freelancer, is how do you treat people? How do you behave when nobody's watching? Because as a freelancer, you are running your own business. You know, for me, I'm alone 20 hours a day, except for my wife and everything. And so you have to make choices that people may not see, but they do matter in the long haul. And so that's important.
So you did some epic monochromatic story Bible illustrations. Were those for a particular project, or was that your own?
That was for a client. Actually, that's been one of the earliest kinds of illustration I got into, just being part of my personal network, was I do illustration for hire for my church. Every couple of weeks, they'll talk about a topic. And so rather than just having their logo on the program or on the slides, they'll hire me to do an illustration that tries to take some piece of insight from what they're trying to teach and put it into a visual form, hopefully to just really grab people's attention. Or sometimes
it's my attention. I thought it was like, that's cool.
Yeah. So I've been doing that pretty much every 3 to 6 weeks for 10 years. I've been getting a new topic to do a little illustration for. And so even when I wasn't getting a whole lot of professional illustration jobs, I was able to hone my skills doing those on a really regular basis. And those are generally more for a more adult audience. And so it's been a really good opportunity to work sort of the other side of my being or whatever, where I like to do a little bit more like conceptual, intellectual ideas in my illustration and stuff like that. And so that the one you're talking about is actually the most complex one I've ever done, but it was 10 illustrations instead of just one. But I thought it made sense for the particular series, and basically taking the whole overall narrative of this Bible that was written over 1,500 years and breaking it down into a way that people can see these themes that kind of carry on through the whole thing. And so finding that moment for each of those themes, like some image that encapsulates it and then allows you to take a glance and see the whole, as they were going through like this 10-week teaching series, they had this one graphic that you could point back and be like, oh yeah, that was week one, that was week three. This, you can see all these moments and then how they fit together. And so that was probably the most ambitious one of those that I've done, but it was after 9 years of monthly practice doing them. So
are those prints that somebody can purchase, or are they just digital images at this point? Or?
They're just digital images. One thing I have found through that particular segment of my work is it's very relicensable. Because, of course, if you have churches all over the country, they're all teaching from the same book. And so eventually they're going to come to the same topic that your church had 2 years ago. And so I've every now and then I'll get an email from somebody in Tennessee or in Germany or whatever, and they're like, hey, can we use this image that you've already made that really fits with what we're trying to do? And so I'm able to relicense that out to them for a small fee. And so with this one, this is one of the more universal in terms of the topics or the themes. And so I'm starting to be able to license that one out as illustration. But I think, like you mentioned, it also would make sense as prints to blow it up. And I would like, now that I've been doing those pieces now for 10 years and I've got enough that I'm proud of, I'd like to maybe make a little art book of them and experiment with that in the future too. So that's something that I definitely have in mind.
What are some of the challenges of being a freelance illustrator? What were some of your challenges over the last 10 years in terms of, doing the work that you've wanted to do and getting to this point where you've got a clear style and a look that I think a lot of people would want to have their book in or their editorial or whatever, piece of illustration that they'd want? What was some of the challenges of getting to this place, or continuing to grow, obviously, but there's obviously some challenges that you've had. Is there any particular challenge that you like to talk about, or?
I think overall one of the big challenges that probably the first 5 years were really characterized by was a sense of doubt and maybe lacking the confidence to do what was needed to get to where I wanted. I had some goals of what I'd like to do, and I tend to not necessarily want to go in the path that a lot of other people are going. I wasn't entirely drawn towards just being in a specific nameable job at a specific studio or whatever. I had more of a vague ambition, but of charting this unknown course. And so that in itself can be kind of scary, but then also it takes, a certain amount of risk taking. It takes a certain amount of being willing to focus and say no to some things and yes to others. And probably for, like I was mentioning earlier about the character development as a very important part of freelancing, I think for the first 5 years, that was probably the most important thing I gained from that period, was I was taking on some projects that I didn't necessarily want to be doing. But sometimes that was a good thing because I needed the money. But eventually I got to the point where I probably needed to learn just to say no and be willing to accept the risks that come with not doing some sure thing that you're not as interested in order to devote more time to pursuing where you want to be.
Yeah.
And that it's interesting because I think I had probably a kind of a clear sense of what all of the challenges would be in pursuing the goal that I wanted. I knew that I probably wouldn't make as much money in illustration as I was in web design or whatever, or at least not at first, and especially not in the transition. And I would definitely need to grow my skills and do all this extra work. And so I was very clear on all these potential problems, but I wanted there to not necessarily have to have those challenges in the way. I wanted to just get there. And eventually I was frustrated enough with where I was that I was willing to just take that risk and just kind of have confidence that, confidence that God was helping me and that I would have, people that I could rely on and trust if the worst things did happen, I wouldn't be, that wouldn't be the end of the world. And
picked a niche of, you said, nonprofit organizations, specifically Christian organizations, but just organizations that you're more interested in leaving a legacy. So it is a challenge, but I think you've started to make that inroad to like just, hey, these are my clients, right?
Yeah, yeah. And so all those like kind of obstacles that I was fearing, each one of those kind of did come true over time. I did make a lot less money for a while, and yeah, I did have a lot of these challenges, but just coming to grips with that was part of the process, and that wasn't necessarily a reason not to do it.
Yeah.
It was just something to be aware of and to prepare for. I think another challenge for me is it sort of goes along, but wanting to just kind of get to the destination without having all these winding paths,
and yeah, then,
or at least wanting to see how every step of the way fits together, or if some opportunity comes up for a while, if I couldn't connect the dots on exactly how that opportunity was going to turn into my destination, I may not have taken on that opportunity. But I think over time, as I've just taken the plunge and put myself in a position where I got to keep swimming because I'm, yeah, I'm taking the risk in this direction, I've taken on more opportunities without necessarily knowing exactly how they all fit together. And over time, I can look back and see like, oh, okay, this helped me prepare for this, or this helped me to be seen for this. And so relaxing a little bit on trying to be able to plot out the whole course, knowing that there's a whole lot of steps between where you're starting and where you're ending, but not necessarily being in control of what all those are going to be or how they're all going to,
yeah,
fit together. And just getting more okay with that has been really crucial for me. And so now I'm much more relaxed about things. I've seen enough progress in the last 3 years that even when there's a dry spell or when, it seems like I'm overcommitted and there's no way I'm going to be able to do this, I can have more perspective and hope because I've seen it work out in the past. And so I don't necessarily freak out as much, and I can just focus on doing what needs to get done in that moment, which is really important.
Awesome. So if you could go back and time travel back to your 20-year-old self, what advice would you give your 20-year-old self?
Yeah, that's a great question. When I was earlier in my 20s, I think one of the big things I would mention is to have a broader perspective of your whole life as your opportunity. I had a lot of success in my late high school, early college. I did a lot of stuff on the side and entered and won some student contests and things like that. And I think that for me, and then just based on praise that people were giving me, it set me up with these really high expectations. And so I felt like I needed to do something massively amazing by the time I was 25. And everything beyond that was just sort of this like hazy blur, like, oh, one day I'll have a family or whatever. But I didn't really think about life as a whole. I was just like, okay, right after college, I need to be exhibiting and I need to do this and this and this. And that created a lot of stress, and it also just wasn't realistic, I don't think. So as I aged and as I didn't meet those goals, there was a little bit of frustration, but I also began to see, you know what? I got my whole life ahead of me. While I'm sitting here bemoaning things that I haven't gotten done by age 27, I may be missing opportunities to build towards something that's going to pay off when I'm 35 or something. So that perspective shift of seeing the longer part of life, people have mentored me and put it in this way, that your 20s are for training. And so it's not necessarily about what you can accomplish right out of the gate, but it's about making sure you're prepared with all the different things that you're going to need. And not just in your career, but also with your life and your character and your family. And the goal in your 20s should be more to, by the time you're 30, you can hit the ground running and have everything you need, rather than realizing along the way, like, oh, I really wish I had invested more in this or in that. And so gradually that became more of my perspective. And then, you know, now I'm 35, and I probably, if I had gone about it in a different way, I probably would be further along now than I am. But I'm happy with where I am now, and I feel like I'm much more balanced than if I had just put everything into one aspect of my life really early on, and felt like I had to really hit some specific goal early on.
So where do you see yourself in 5 years?
That's another good question. And prior to you asking that question, I don't think I had thought about it in those terms, but I think it's really good. And I was looking back 5 years ago, I feel like I actually am now where I, if somebody asked me that question 5 years ago, I am now there. So, and we just had a baby and it just hit 10 years. So this is kind of a period of transition where I think I've gotten into a good niche. I've gotten really good clients. I'm happy with the gradual progress with my skills. And so part of a big thing for me right now is continuing in that direction, but making it work better. I need to earn more money. I need to be able to get more done. And I need to adapt now to having a whole family to provide for. So that's, I think, the most urgent priority is, you know, like they say, first you get good and then you get fast and then you get good and fast. And so right now getting good and fast and able to really get more of the kinds of things done that I'm doing is really important. But along with that, I also, as I've mentioned, there are other, you know, parts of kinds of illustration that I would,
other avenues,
I'd like to pursue, like some more conceptual or editorial work, more geared towards adults and ideas. And then also maybe doing some more personal work and starting exhibiting again, or putting together an art book, things like that. So I haven't entirely nailed down a specific goal.
But you got an idea.
Ideas
mulling around, right?
Yeah, I've got a sense of, like, what are the areas that are still feeling a little bit underdeveloped or unfulfilled? And then also, what are the more urgent needs now, like earning more money?
Multiple streams of income, right?
Yeah, exactly. So
illustration is dying down this couple months. Okay, what else can I do? I could sell prints, or I could do this, right? You know, or, you know, whatever pops up that's you can creatively engage in, right?
Yeah. So, and, you know, it may be that as we pursue this, and as now as I have a kid to provide for, it may start to make more sense for me to go a studio route for a little while and,
you know, I can see that concept art.
Get more connections that way and stuff like that. So I'm definitely open to that as well. That might be something in the next year that I'm really considering, is whether do I stay full-time freelance at home, or do I try to get some more steady gigs and things like that.
You've never really been in-house. It's always been freelance, right?
My first job out of college was with a little startup. There were like five people there, so it wasn't really, I mean, it was working for a company doing some animation and graphics, but it wasn't anything like working in a big studio. So that is one area that probably could learn a lot from. And at times it was like, oh, that'd be nice. That'd be nice to do one day, but I still got to build up my skills. And, you know, now it's something that I'm seriously considering for this next year. So I'll have to see how that works out.
It's great. So what's your advice to freelancers in illustration? I mean, you've been doing it for 10 or so years. What's your advice to people who are starting out, or just freelancers in general in illustration?
So a few things. One thing is to do your due diligence in entrepreneurial language, survey the industry, whether it's animation or children's illustration or different things, really get a sense of all the different kinds of opportunities that are out there. I think for me, when I was starting, I just had this sort of naive sense of the most obvious things. It's like, oh, there's Pixar and there's Disney and there's DreamWorks, or oh, there's children's books, or there's like big name brands, or, and I didn't really realize that there were so many other opportunities at all different levels of, you know, ways you can get involved at different levels of skill. And you don't necessarily just start at these like name brand things that people who aren't in the industry can name or whatever. And so, like I mentioned earlier, there was a period where I was trying to do a email database for illustration jobs. And while that didn't work out in terms of actually using that for marketing, it was super helpful in that it helped me see like thousands of other kinds of opportunities that I wasn't necessarily thinking of. It opened
your mind, yeah.
Yeah, it opened my mind. And I think that also gave me more confidence because I realized like, oh yeah, I could definitely make a living at this and I could get started at this even if I'm not yet ready for those name brand gigs. And so that was really helpful. And that's kind of been part of why I wanted to be in freelancing in the first place, is just to find what's out there that's not the things everybody knows about. And so, you know, the things I'm doing now, working with nonprofits, I kind of had a sense that was what I wanted to do, but I didn't really know that that even existed.
Yeah.
And it took a while to find that opportunity. And so for you, it may be some other specific area that you can find, oh, there's actually a market for this now. And that's so much more the case now that we have mass internet media and things are so much more fragmented. There's all kinds of audiences that you can tap into that aren't just what, you know, everybody knows about. And another big thing that's been helpful for me since I got my agent has been to learn to see through the perspective of my clients.
Yeah.
And like a main example of that is with my portfolio, I tended to do a lot of different things. And so, you know, I thought, well, I have one illustration here of this and one illustration here of that and one illustration here of that. And my agent really helped me see that the client needs to see a lot in certain areas, but they also need to see specific, like for me, I was much more like, well, I did this and mentally I know I could do, I've drawn characters and I drew one time I did a sketch of a dog. So I know if I ever got offered to do a job with a dog, I could do the dog.
Yeah, yeah.
But the client doesn't know that. They just see what you have in your portfolio. And so, you know, this one time the agent presented me with a possible client and they're like, this job involves vegetables. Can you draw vegetables? And at the time that seemed like, of course I can draw vegetables, but
simple shapes.
Right. But to them, it was very important for them to see that.
Yeah,
and I think it was a really valid request because when I did a demo sketch of vegetables, I realized like, oh, these vegetables aren't as good as I would want them to be. So, so knowing that your portfolio needs to be cohesive, but also it needs to have
variety
of the types of things you want them to hire you for.
Yeah.
And so that's, yeah, that's definitely been a good guiding influence. And then also just thinking about what are the priorities of your client. They don't necessarily want, you know, for me, I'm somebody who can do a lot of different things. But if they're only in the market for one of those things, they don't care that I can do all these different things. They want somebody who's like super reliable on that one thing. And then so realizing what they want and then sometimes putting your overall goals for your work or your portfolio need to kind of be put under the goals of the client in order to gain their confidence and make them succeed.
No, it makes sense. I remember at a children's book panel, one of the agents said, if you could have a tab or a page in your portfolio of just babies, that would be great. Just rows and rows of illustrations of babies. And I was like, okay, I have a lot of kids. I don't have babies though. You know, so
wow.
It's just kind of funny.
That's
just
great.
Like, okay, well, just have like, okay, like you have all these tabs of different things and there's babies. Okay, that's the one I'm looking for. So, I mean, for illustrating books, that's what she mentioned. She was a top agent, you know, works in the industries at one of the top literary agencies that does quite a few books. And that was one of her big suggestions. So it's kind of interesting. So what advice would you have to somebody who's starting out in illustration who wanted to like, wow, I need to do this, like maybe somebody in high school or making a change of a career, jumping into illustration? What's your advice to them?
Yeah, so there's, I think there's two extremes that I know for me, I went through both of these extremes in my 20s. On the one side, you can sort of be oblivious to what it really takes to yeah. succeed as an illustrator, and you might have a kind of an overly high opinion of how good you are compared mm-hmm. to the market. And so you don't, you know, you think it's easier than it is. And then I guess on the other, that was me in my early 20s, in my later 20s, the other extreme was realizing what it takes and then being overwhelmed by it. And to the point where you just put it off indefinitely, or you give up, or you're like, well, it's just never going to happen. So I'm just going to do whatever, you know? I think I've been on both sides of that. I think it's, you know, you can't avoid either of those, but you want to learn and really have an accurate assessment of your work, and you want to have a real sense of where you and your style and your abilities fit, so you're not just applying for jobs that you're the wrong fit for when maybe you're a great fit for something else. And then you also want to realize how much work it will take to get to the point where you're really competitive in a professional market. And so then if you realize that, that'll motivate you to practice, or ideally it should motivate you to practice and maybe to develop some sense of a plan of, okay, I got to work on this area and this area and this area and this area. And so maybe you work on, you know, gesture drawing for a little while, and then you work on brush technique for a while, you work on composition for a while. So that's good, but then at the same time, you know, not getting so overwhelmed with that and not finding a way to enjoy the process with each little bit of growth. You want to enjoy the journey. And then also it could be helpful to be willing to find jobs that fit where you're at. I definitely have found that my illustration skills have grown much more rapidly as I'm doing it more. And since I was already out of school, to be able to do it more made most sense if I was doing it in the context of a paying job.
Yeah.
And so a lot of the earlier illustration
jobs, used to deadlines.
yeah, having deadlines and learning to work with a client's vision and yeah, like I mentioned, just getting a sense of where the client's coming from with their perspective.
Collaboration.
And then and then also, you know, definitely learning to work fast, because I think with my personal projects, I'll put them off and forever because
we noodle until everything is perfect. Right?
Yeah, I want it, or not even start until you feel like it'll be perfect or something. And so when you have jobs, it forces you to sometimes be like, okay, well, this is good enough for the amount they're paying me and the amount of time that they gave me.
Yeah.
And I've grown so much more in the last 2 or 3 years by getting, you know, spending 70% of my time on illustration rather than 10% of my time and then doing something else as my day job. And so if you are at a point, I mean, and not everyone is immediately going to be at the point where even they can get, you know, at least reasonably paying jobs. But once you are, like, be willing to take those jobs, even if they're not where you want to end up, because that can be a really good tool for you to keep making progress. But just, of course, be realistic about what kind of jobs that you're able to reach at your particular level.
That's great advice. So where can we see more of your work, Ian? Where do we find you on the web?
Yeah, so my personal website is iandale.net, iandale.net. And then you can also see my work through my agent, Deborah Wolf, LTD. Her website is illustrationonline.com. And then I'm on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram as Ian Dale Art, iandaleart. And Behance and ArtStation, I'm just Ian Dale. So you can search for me there. So
that's awesome. Thank you for your time to come down and do this interview. It was great interviewing you. My name is Santosh Uman, and I am available on Twitter at Santosh913. This is the Society of Illustrators of Los Angeles podcast. Thanks for joining us. Bye. Hey, folks. This is Santosh Uman. I am the president of the Society of Illustrators of Los Angeles. Thank you guys for listening to the podcast. We hope to bring you more exciting podcast interviews every month. In the meantime, folks, if you like the podcast, please rate us on iTunes. That would help us greatly. And if you are interested in becoming a member of the Society of Illustrators of Los Angeles, you can go to www.si-la.org. It's a great opportunity to connect, get into community, and learn to spread your wings as a creator. So come by and visit us at our physical location in Eagle Rock, at the Pop Secret Gallery, 5119 Eagle Rock Boulevard, Los Angeles, California, 90041. Hope to see you guys soon. Expect some exciting podcasts coming up. Bye.